Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Joseph Chilton Pierce, who is the author of Exploring the Crack in the Cosmic Egg, Split Minds, and Meta-Realities. Joseph Pierce is the author of 11 books, including The Crack in the Cosmic Egg, Magical Child, and The Biology of Transcendence. He's been on the radio show several times, and we've enjoyed his different ideas, especially how children and humans in general are able to be culturally, culturally programmed versus the idea that perhaps this might not be the best thing for all of us. Welcome, Joseph. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Now, am I speaking with Susan?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for having me, Susan. I believe it rings a bell. We've been on before, haven't we?
Yes, we have. I don't know that I interviewed you on The Crack in the Cosmic Egg, but I know I interviewed you on The Biology of Transcendence.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. In fact, I brought a stack of those other books here in case I may ask a question about them.
There you
try
go.
Try to be prepared.
Well, I think actually if you've been on several times since you've had 11 books, I think we've probably talked three or four times, I would imagine.
Well, I think officially there's only 10 books, but being credited for an extra one, maybe I should turn around and write another one, huh?
Right. Well, I enjoyed your book here. I have read Carlos Castaneda's writings, and I enjoyed your frequent references to Don Juan and his teachings, especially on the body knowing. I think that is basically some of the best non-ordinary consciousness information that we have. So I enjoyed that.
Well, thanks a great deal. Yeah, I think that, of course, I think Carlos kept going too long. He should have stopped about number four.
You're right.
But after that, it began to be kind of a, he had said it all and didn't know when to shut up.
Right.
Which is a problem we all have, including me, certainly.
Right. Well, would you like to explain to the listeners what the cosmic egg is?
Oh, that was just a term I picked up years and years ago as the whole mental, cultural sphere in which we live. I mean, the whole world as we know it, we can refer to it as a cosmic egg. And a crack in it means that there's a way beyond it. That is, it weaves a pretty tight web around us, our cultural beliefs, and there's always a way around all that. And for instance, our cultural beliefs concerning the physical world are quite stiff and unbending. And someone like, well, for instance, Castaneda came along, and he was really popular for a while. He sort of stopped while he was ahead. But the reason is that an awful lot of people are aware that we're hemmed in by our own ideas. For instance, in my late teens, I suppose I discovered what I called then unconflicted behavior. That most of us have all sorts of notions that strike us, but we think, oh, no, I can't do that. So the conflict comes from our knowing inwardly that there are all these possibilities, but seeing outwardly all the things that will happen if I don't toe the mark and vote properly, appropriately, and so on. So the cosmic egg is the sum total of the awful, suffocating cultural belief system, which actually surrounds all experience of a human, we find if you know the book called Original Wisdom by Robert Wolfe, that is a contemporary form of somebody who has discovered beyond our cosmic egg, and they can do all sorts of, it opens up a whole other world to them that ordinarily is closed. And if you should try to discover, discuss that world, if you find that crack into it, try to discover it, discuss it, you're liable to, you can't tell what might happen. I've found very early on that it's conflict within us. Some hunch within us says, oh boy, I bet I could do that. And something else, so you better not. And that's the whole issue of how we bring up our children and everything else. They know that there are enormous things they can do, but very quickly they find that for the majority of it, they'll receive a great big no-no and maybe punishment if they go ahead. So this conflict is set up in us, and that's really what I've talked about, is getting beyond that conflict and opening up this other realm of possibility. And that's I've been writing about it ever since. And this new book of my, not new book, but this re-edition of my book, Exploring the Crack in the Cosmic Egg. And they did a beautiful job with that book. They got Tom Hartman, whom I've known for decades, to write a foreword for it. And generally, when they bring up an old book and republish it, they don't go to all that trouble. But these people did, and turned out this really very beautiful cover and all for this book, Exploring the Crack in the Cosmic Egg. And it gives a good foreword in it, has a foreword by Robert Sardella. And he's all put together. I'm proud of the book, and I'm delighted to be able to talk about it some.
Well, I wanted to, before we get started on some of the concepts in the book, I just want to remind the listeners that, in case they haven't been familiar with the Carlos Castaneda's work, that after they go through this training program with Don Juan, who's like the shaman, they actually have to jump off a cliff and switch to a non-ordinary reality before they hit the bottom. So they have to shift dimensions, which of course is a great crack in the cosmic egg, because most of us aren't even aware of other dimensions, much less able to shift between them, or else they'll fall to their death in this dimension. So that's the type of thing that Carlos Castaneda's was talking about. Now, you start your book by explaining a little bit about something called body knowing, and how we actually are probably programmed, just by virtue of being born, with a whole bunch of more innate, intuitive, and below the level of consciousness information within our body that allows us to do things that are fairly remarkable. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Well,
body
sure.
Knowing.
In fact, we spend most of our life jumping through the hoops of this strange culture we live in, with all of its verbotenness and do this or else. And we really lead very restricted lives. And I've been hollering in all of my books that what's open for us is vastly beyond all that. And, certainly from the time I was a teenager on, I discovered this unconflicted behavior. That is where one part of me is not saying, no, you better not, and the other part saying, give it a go. And so if you're in an unconflicted state, and the idea hits you, just do it. And certainly mm-hmm. I've had some remarkable experiences with witnesses and everything else of what ordinarily would be considered totally impossible things. And but if you can get rid of the conflict within you, you can just jump right in. I'm thinking of in fact, back of my very latest book, Heartmind Matrix, I have a section printed directly from the great doctor, I'm trying to think of his name now, who delivered 2,000 infants at Petit Vieux Hospital in Paris, and ended up in a research lab in London on the effect of emotions and all creating conflicts within us. And one of the things that he has stated in major writings is that getting rid of those conflicts, when a woman is ready to go into labor to deliver a child, if she has no conflicts whatsoever, each one of these what used to be called labor pangs, and they'd scream and holler and so on, they realize without that conflict in them, at each of these signals, if they go along with it and surrender to it completely, they have an orgasm. And so then mm-hmm. he wrote a whole nother study from this laboratory in England of the orgasm as being the great treasure of life. The most beneficial possible thing can happen to the body and to the brain. And so they have found that if a woman can approach her childbirth with unconflicted behavior and allow nature to take over, who we really are to take over, she goes into orgasm after orgasm, delivering her infant, and is in literally a state of ecstasy. And boy, we're just racking up the examples of this. It really is startlingly true. And so that's what I meant when I made those references in there. We think of my reference there to Carlos Castaneda's work. He was mm-hmm. one of the earliest ones. He later on, I think, stuck his neck out and got it chopped off. He tried. He kept going too long, and he wrote seven or eight more of those books. And if he had stopped about number four, it would have been great for him. But he went too far, and finally, he lost all credibility, which is a real shame, because there's a lot to be said for what he was pointing up in his first four books. We've had shaman coming along throughout our history who can break the cultural bind on us and do things we can't. And they keep trying to tell us over and over, look, these are self-imposed limitations on you.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of them, and the human being has enormous capacities before him. And that's what I'm talking about all over again in this new one, exploring the crack in the cosmic egg. I get right back into that whole issue.
Yeah, a lot of people would say, would experience body knowing more often when they're in a state of danger or, area where if they don't get out of a situation, they could die or have great bodily harm. And what I think what happens is things occur just very naturally and quickly without them thinking about it. Like the mother who lifts the car off her child She doesn't even think that she can't do it. She just does it. And she doesn't even know that she's doing it until after she's done it. I mean, there's no conscious thought involved. And I think in your book you have an example of someone who was just about to fall off a mountain, was mountain climbing and was really about to fall off when something took over, and he was able to quickly get out of danger through kind of superhuman strength and, you know, just an energy running through him that is that was quite surprising.
Yeah, well, I would drop the notion of superhuman strength. That was the great John Muir, who, you know, the forests on the west coast of Muir Woods. He was a great explorer and a great man. And this is exactly what happened with him. He was scaling this cliff and suddenly realized that he hadn't calculated right, and he couldn't go forward. There was no place to, and it was impossible for him to turn around and try to go backward. There wasn't room to turn around. He was caught, spraddled out flat on this cliffside, and then all of a sudden he just this thing took over, and he went into a state of real calm, and from that point on, he knew exactly what to do and came through it safely. He's the one also that fell off the great huge summit there in the Rockies. What is that big dome? That huge thing. And in a snowstorm, he fell 3,000 feet.
Oh my goodness!
Into a snowbank. During this, and went into this on his way down, went into this marvelous state, the same John Muir, the great explorer. And he said he suddenly became a snowflake, and he fell into this snowbank from 3,000 feet and knew nothing but ecstasy and joy and happiness from it, because his other self had taken over. And he's there. We have a lot of examples like that. That's, of course, what I'm talking about, this exploring the crack. We haven't really begun to explore the crack in our cultural egg that is really there. And I don't think we can get enough information out about it. Boy, when I look at the education of our children today, I'm in despair, because in looking at all these impossible things on electronic devices, they identify with the electronic device and will never develop anything like this on their own. Mm-hmm. Is that making sense?
Yeah, it does. Now, you had stated in your book that there is something that occurs after age 6 or 7 that allows one to enter into this sort of state. And you used the experiment that Uri Geller did to prove that that's about when people are able to access this crack in the cosmic egg.
Well, there are several very critical periods of changing in the actual growth and processing of the brain in the child. And one of these is around 3 to 4, and then they go into a different phase from about 4 to 6. And at each of these periods, you're having real growth processes going on in the neurons of the brain. The brain itself is really growing enormously. But unfortunately, the possibilities during that period are extraordinary. At around age 7, that stage of the brain's growth has begun to complete another big growth spurt, when they could do again a whole another batch of things, none of which ever really get a chance because of the cultural constraints. At age 7, most of us are in school, and there's no quicker way to kill all this off than schooling. And now when I say that, I sound like, what would it be? Not a communist. Just, but it sounds awfully strange to say, but schooling is an utter disaster, as it has been, and I see no chance of it changing. All the Rudolf Steiner Waldorf schools is the closest thing to doing what the brain is and the growth of the child is designed to do at this time. And of course, the problem is with the Steiner schools, they're hard to find. They're few and far between. But what they do in Waldorf education is a marvelous thing. You remember when the Nazis took over in 1932 after burning the Reichstag and the Nazis in Germany took over completely? They did two things immediately. They seized control of all communications like radio. And the other thing was they closed the Waldorf schools. And they were growing like mad in Germany. Just more excitement about the Waldorf school and what it was doing with their children. And the Nazis closed them down completely. Mm-hmm. Made all Waldorf education strictly illegal in Germany. And the reason was, the Germans, Hitler and his group said, no, they teach children to think. We want them taught to obey.
Yeah, and, well, that's true.
Yes, it was true then, and it's true to a large extent today. Mm-hmm. We want them to be good citizens, make good salesmen, boost the national economy, boost the whole frame of work, help pay the taxes and support our seven wars that are going on right now that we're supporting. Our job is to bring up children who will be good supporters of this current. Mm-hmm. We could say cosmic egg, if you like.
Right.
And so I'm just brought it out to open here, really what's going on at one stage only in this book, Exploring. I was awfully pleased for them to bring it back out. It had been out of print for a long time. And my wife found this old copy and this ancient old cover on it, and she said, well, they've been bringing out new editions of your older books, why don't they do this? I said, why? No one asked her, and immediately she got on it, and they spent a lot of time. They got that forward by Tom Hartman, who's a great guy, and put that beautiful cover on it. And so I've never been so pleased with anything as that bringing out of an older work. And boy, now that I've read the darn thing, I like it. I think it's a good book.
So let's go back to the Uri Geller experiment. He had an experiment where, I guess on the television, he was getting people to try his spoon bending and other psychokinetic things, and you said that 1,500 out of several million people who tried this were able to do it. Is that right?
I don't think I gave any such numbers. I have no recollection of that whatsoever. To my way of thinking, anyone who can drop their conflicts within them can do that kind of thing if they want to.
Right. Well, this was actually something you quoted. It was something that he actually did, so there were some numbers attached to it. But in any case, you went on to say that when they looked at who did it, it was the kids in this age group were able to do it very successfully. You know, 7 to 9 year olds were able to do it.
In what group?
The 7 to 9 year olds
were
able to do it very well. But most of them were in this age group.
Did you say Tibetans or?
The children that were trying it on the television.
Oh.
It says, you said that Geller discovered that he could bend forks, coins, keys without touching them, and he discovered this at the age of 7.
Yeah.
Okay. That's when discovered it. And then later on, when they did that experiment, that the majority of the people that were able to do this were also in that age group. So there's something about this age group that is that they're able to suspend belief in the cosmic egg and do things quite out of the ordinary.
Yes, the child's real spirit is trying to break free, trying to break out of that dreadful, encompassing phony egg in which we live. There's a big shift at age 7. It goes on up until the beginning of adolescence, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have the recent studies that are coming out about the changes in the brain structure in teenagers. My Lord, I was astonished at the new research on that. The huge changes that are taking place between the four different sections of the brain, and how finally, by the time they're 17 or so, it's beginning to settle down, but not entirely until about 21, and so that we could easily enough find why our accidents in our young drivers are so high, because they have this strange notion inside them that they can't be hurt.
Right.
That comes with the territory, and that shifts the brains going around. But
right.
Of course, since they never get a chance to exercise it, to let it bloom, they kill themselves in automobiles.
I think there's
something kind of ironic about the whole process.
Well, I found the area what I was talking about. It says that he had a performance on TV where he asked the participants in their homes to bend a spoon while he bent the spoon. There were 30,000 estimated viewers in the British event. Some 1,500 reported that they were able to bend the spoon. And all of the successful participants were between the ages of 7 and 14.
I didn't hear that. I'm delighted with it, and it makes
sense. That's on page 36. That's
perfectly good sense.
So the idea is that before we become adults and have gone through this school system where we really define the cosmic egg, between the ages of 7 and 14, magical things can happen, because we're not so conditioned.
Oh, indeed, and it's our job as good citizens to make sure that they don't discover that. Otherwise, they wouldn't knuckle down and support the national debt and the armies and so on
right.
and so forth. They wouldn't make good citizens. And we want good citizens. Nature, our creator, and all might be offering us all these chances to break free, but the cosmic egg is a bit too much for them, and so that's I really got into that pretty much in exploring the crack that we're talking about this morning. Although I must say, I left an awful lot yet to be discovered in that book. A lot of things that I'm discovering just right up to now, the notion that that a woman's emotional state up to 1 year before she actually conceives a child, her emotional state is going to affect what happens to that child's conception itself. And then the emotional state she's in while carrying an infant in her womb enters also into it very strongly. And if she goes through a lot of fear and so on and so forth while pregnant, that will be reflected in her child. Now, and I had stated that what this should mean is the whole nation, as a whole real culture, the minute a woman got pregnant, they'd stand behind her to make sure that she never had to worry about a thing in the world, but have a happy, joyous experience, and we would immediately have a different civilization. And I know that to be the case. I mean, this is something I know so thoroughly. And I'm delighted they're bringing out this old book, although I wish I could have gotten more in there, but it wasn't available at that time.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But it is. It is now. So this is still the crack in our egg. we should follow through on it.
So let's talk a little bit about the control aspects of society. You mentioned education as being the primary, you know, the formal education as being the primary way that children become conditioned to obey rather than to think and to, you know, explore more of their true nature. What are some of the ways that that we can get out of that? You talked a little bit about some spiritual practices. Are there some things that we can do to decondition ourselves so that we can be more open to this part of our nature?
Well, now, I'm very heretical in these issues. I turned out a book not long after that called The Death of Religion and Rebirth of Spirit. And I've attributed an awful lot of the dreadful suffering of the human race on their religious practices, the churches. And once it, I remember my brother, when he was injured out on the golf course and broke his hip, and they whisked him. He was 92 years old, and they whisked him into with this broken hip started doing all, had to order a hip replacement and so forth. And he said to me, he said, "Joe, once the medics get their hands on you, they never let go." And believe me, the medics came rushing in to help him. One thing added to another, and he was dead within a week. Mm-hmm. And just shattered my life practically. But there's a good, once the medics get their hands on you, they never let go and generally bury an awful lot of their customers. And the same thing with religions. I know that the grace of the human spirit is so incredibly powerful. That's what John Muir found on that cliff that brought him out. What was that? It was the spirit. His spirit, the human spirit, coming in to bail him out of a bad situation. And why this can happen for some and not for others is largely on their belief systems. And mm-hmm. So I'm finding this exploring the crack in the cosmic egg. One of the things is we find the crippling problems of our orthodox, state-supported religions. Send your monies to me, as old Bishop Jones used to say on the radio. And so this is a huge issue, to my way of thinking. Right now, we're looking at the fact that the average 6-month-old infant spends 2 hours a day in front of a backlit screen, either computer or television. And the great strides that are supposed to happen in the second and third year are not happening because they're all caught up in an electronic world. They're not really developing who the human is. They're developing a customer for the next electronic gadget. And this isn't good sales pitch for our mercantile. What's the word I'm after? I'm after there. Just the whole taxation, the whole system that our country, and we're the worst in the world, we're probably worse than any other, is based on supporting a very small, powerful, very powerful group of extremely, excessively wealthy people. And if you go against that in any way whatsoever, you'll be above all just completely ignored, because one voice doesn't mean a blasted thing. Or if you really ever should get enough of a following, you would be absorbed then into some political movement, and so on. So the human spirit has as yet not been allowed to regain what it once has. I think of this book, Original Wisdom, by Wolf, with two F's on the end. It just blows you out of orbit, and yet we're talking about something happening right now on one of the most mind-boggling breakthroughs of the human spirit that we've had. But it won't stand much of a chance against the economic pressures and the legal pressures and all that go on. So when you get in this business of exploring the crack in the cosmic egg that I'm talking about there, it really moves against a lot of invested interests.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be called invested; it'd be just vested interests in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who goes over and occasionally gives regular talks over in Holland and on up into the Scandinavian countries. And always her message she's taking is the same thing, trying to get people to go ahead and risk living the way something deep within them knows should be.
Mm-hmm.
I must say she's a good friend, and I've been delighted with the fact that she's written one book. She didn't get anywhere with it, but she'll try again. We can't get enough people talking about this. I think I've yakked enough on that.
Well, there is something within us that is a guidance system that is, in my life, it's mostly come out in times of danger, like when someone had a gun to my head or a knife to my throat. It kind of took over, and I knew exactly what to do. I was very calm, and I didn't have any fear at all, and then I knew exactly what to do, and some of it was quite interesting. It wasn't quite violent, but it got me out of the situation. And it was needed, evidently, because that's what happened. So,
I love what that example you're just giving, because so often that happens with people. If they have no fear, just all of a sudden their fear drops away. They're absolutely in what would be the right thing. They can't be touched.
Right.
They can't be hurt. And so the very thing that defeats us in most of these emergencies is we go into an emotional emergency mode, release all these things in the body that are based on fear, and it spreads, picks up. We're gone, or we're in for it then. But if we can not fall into that fear mode, and it doesn't mean that we'll have angels descending from cloud nine to bail us out. No, it's just that a person who has no conflict within them and is unconflicted can walk through without being touched.
In your book, you differentiate fright, which is the startle response, which is like a natural thing that occurs when there's danger. If a snake jumps up at you, you're going to have this startle response. There's no way you cannot have it. We would all have it. But that's very different than fear, which is a learned response.
Yes, and that's a good example you're using there. Sure. I think quite often with children even, if they haven't developed this fear reaction to things, they can open up to something like that. That we've had happen time and again. We come home and we'll find our little toddler or something playing with, black wizard spiders or something like that.
Yeah.
But a little bit later they'll react with fear.
Right.
And
they
immediately
won't do that.
It's, No, they can't, because take dogs, for instance. I remember once as a child I was warned against the dog in this particular yard. It was surrounded by a high wall fence, and it was up on what we call the highlands. The terrace in our little town. And one day I was in a hurry, and I wanted to get to the other side. And I had to cut through that place. I had heard that they had a terrible dog. They were wealthy people. Had just and I was about 10 years old. And I cut through there anyway, and just all of a sudden felt this big thing slam me down on the ground. And here was this great, huge police dog. Had me literally pinned down, and I had heard his name, and I remember I loved that dog. I know that sounds silly, but I just felt this great rush of emotion, and why this dog has been so misunderstood, and here he is here holding me down just to be friends. And believe me, I walked out there with that dog wagging his tail and making sure that I got across okay. So this can happen in children.
But if you had been very fearful, the dog might have bit you.
Oh, he would have been unpleasant indeed.
Yeah. What you have in you and are projecting toward the animal, that dictates what the animal's going to do.
Indeed,
the animal
does.
Is very much within body knowing, and the animal knows what your state of mind is.
Yes, that's why we're the superior animal on this earth. And if you read Kinship of All Life, Boone's work that came out in 1950, Kinship of All Life, and here it is, he spelled it right out there. What we're talking about, that we have within us this capacity to literally mingle with the animals right and left, and they won't know any fear from us because we don't have any fear of them, and there's no harm involved and so on. And this, you know as well as I, or maybe you haven't run across any times when children will be playing with what had been called very dangerous creatures. There was a wild wolf preserve out here in the west somewhere where all these wolves, rather than shooting them, they started bringing them in and putting them in this large penned-in place. I don't know why they were doing that, but my daughter climbed the fence, went right over to be friends with them.
Great.
And they responded to her, you know, wagging their tails. And all. But that's who she was. And she loved them instead of fearing them. And there is no way on earth she would have been hurt.
Yeah, that's. Well, but with our conditioning, it's hard to maintain that once you're not a child, I think.
Well, we don't have to. We have it as children. We don't have to lose it then. It's always right there beneath the surface, and we can fall back on it in emergencies.
That's true.
That whole thing of unconflicted behavior in my late teens, and I was doing some radically impossible things then, from simply suspending all fear. And this other thing just takes over and works for us. And I think I wrote some of those things out. I had to be real careful with that because I would lose too much credibility with my readers. But that this, again, where the capacities of the human outside the terrible confines of this status quo of our society. All of that is always right there. And I would like, if I were going to live a lot longer, I would write a couple more books about all that because I think it's terribly important. And it's important now when we get into the business of global warming and the profound errors made in that based on fear rather than going along with the earth.
Natural, what's happening with the earth. We're coming up on the end of our hour, Joseph. Would you like to give your contact information?
I'm not quite sure what you would mean by that.
Oh, do you have a website or a place where they have your books?
Well, certainly, I think that any of my publishers they could call. I don't, and I'm told that I have a website, but I've certainly never seen it. I've told that I'm on Facebook, but I didn't put myself there. And when I heard the term Facebook, I thought it was a hilarious term.
Yeah.
I still don't know.
Well, they can just Google you. They can Google you. Joseph Chilton Pearce, P-E-A-R-C-E. And then everything will come up. Your website, your Facebook, everything will come up.
And I
that's
feel
how
like
people
that
get in touch with you these days is through the internet.
Well, I guess so. I'll be 89 my next birthday, and I don't care. I mean, the public opinion or following or all that. You know, at this stage, you just can't care about all that.
That's
and
true.
Meanwhile, lots of other stuff is opening up, believe me. Age is to be feared only if you're tuned into the wrong station.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Joseph. It's been a delightful conversation, and I'm so glad that they brought back Exploring the Crack in the Cosmic Egg.
thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I enjoy it.
Alrighty.
Okay.
Well, thank you. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we're going to be interviewing Alan Shoemaker, Ashwagandha Medicine, the Shamanic World of Amazonic Sacred Plant Healing. And then the next week, on the 19th of April, Pramamanda, Without You There, The Zen of Unity. And then we'll be talking about the book Urantia with Don Ware on the 26th. Thank you very much for joining us today. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show.